Welcome to Strong Tower Radio Today. The views and opinions expressed on this show do not necessarily reflect the views of Strong Tower Radio, West Central Michigan Media Ministries, or its employees.
Hello and welcome to Good Growing with the Garden Guy with Gary Heilick and your co-host Sue Majeure and Tom Majeure from Strong Tower Radio. Welcome back, Gary.
It's springtime.
Yeah, springtime. Well, it depends. By the time we broadcast, it might feel like springtime. Right now, it feels like wintertime.
Well, we've had temperatures in the 70s. It's getting a little cold right now, but that's Michigan, Tom.
That's right. We had about almost pea-sized hail this afternoon up here in Cadillac, Michigan.
Wow. Yeah.
And Sue's down in warm Kalamazoo.
No, it's not that warm down here, I regret to say.
But if you don't like the weather, they say in Michigan, just wait a while and it'll
wait
change.
Wait 5 minutes.
That is very true. It really is that's true.
The interesting thing, and briefly we'll get on to the rest of the program, but I went in my greenhouse. It's 45, 46 degrees outdoors. And inside my greenhouse, inside my germinator, it was like 95 degrees.
Yeah, it's going to get cold, really cold soon. So
it's quite a difference. Well, let's get started. Sue, why don't you lead us with a word of prayer?
Okay. Heavenly Father, thank you that spring is coming because we've had a long winter and we're really looking forward to it and seeing the new growing things, especially the ephemeral wildflowers that you briefly gift us with and the other exciting growing things that we can make ourselves that we're making plans and putting them in and hopefully grow closer to you as we spend time in your creation and the lessons that it has to teach us. In Jesus' name, amen.
Amen. Amen. Well, Gary, you know, we've had a quiz at the beginning of each week, and last week it was humiliating for me. I hope it's a lot easier this week.
Well, it's on flowers. Maybe next time we won't do a quiz to give you guys breaks.
Oh, there you go.
I look forward to the quiz.
We should have our listeners do the quiz.
Okay. All right, here's the first one. It's on flowers.
Yes.
Which flower was once worth more than gold during the Dutch tulip mania of the 1630s? Now, this is not going to be easy.
Oh, no.
Is it the Semper Augusta tulip? Was it the Black Parrot tulip? The Rembrandt tulip, or the Queen of Night tulip, worth more than gold in 1630.
I think the Queen of Night tulip.
I think so also.
Is that your final answer?
That is my answer.
Yes.
You want to phone a friend?
Yeah.
No, it's the Semper Augusta tulip.
Ah, there you go.
I didn't know that one either when I was doing the research on it, but hey. All right, this one might be a little easier. The world's largest producer of cut flowers by export value is from what country? A, the Netherlands, B, Colombia, and then Ecuador or Kenya.
I think it's the Netherlands.
Soup?
Yeah, the Alsmeer flower market is a huge, overwhelming business. So I'm going to say either there, let's see, it's either the Netherlands or Colombia. But I'm gonna say the Netherlands.
And you would be correct.
They fly. I understand that they have flights that fly out every day. I mean, it's a huge
big
logistical
business.
Thing.
Very big business. Next one.
I saw a little thing on their Alsmeer market, and it's the commercial value and how they use the auctioneering for that just kind of blows your mind.
Listeners, you need to know that we do not see the answers ahead of time. This is legitimate and real.
Okay, this one might be a little more difficult. Which flower is native primarily to Mexico and Central America? Is it the petunia, the dahlia, snapdragons, or carnation? Petunia, dahlia, snapdragon, or carnation?
I truly don't know.
I don't think it's the carnation.
That would be correct. You want to go with a 50? You want a 50-50? It's between,
okay, let's go for a 50-50.
It's between the dahlia and the snapdragon.
I will say the dahlia, just it just
yeah,
sounds right.
Yeah, I'm kind of leaning towards that too.
And
I'm
you
vote for
would
that.
Be correct.
Oh, good. Did you know, and Sue probably knows this, but our great grandfather was a prize winning dahlia grower.
Wow. I know a guy that's really big on dahlias in the Lansing area.
Hollyhocks.
Yep. That too, but dahlia was one of the ones that he got prizes from the garden club.
Okay, number four. In Victorian floriography, what did a yellow carnation symbolize? Was it friendship, joy, disdain, or new beginnings?
I'm going to say joy.
I like that answer.
That's too bad, Tommy. Because it's disdain.
It's disdain.
Oh!
You know, that does not sound so unfamiliar to me.
If you have a frenemy out there, send them some bouquets of yellow carnations, and they'll never know what hit them. They'll be smiling. Oh, thank you, sir, very much. Yeah, I just disdain you. Okay, moving on. Now, you don't want to do that. All right, number five, saffron, the world's most expensive spice, is harvested from which flower? Is it the autumn crocus, the saffron crocus, glory of the snow, or colocynth?
The autumn crocus.
I like the distractor question of the saffron.
What are you going to say, Dad?
Crocus. I'm just going to say it because I have no idea.
Yeah. So you should have taken the hint. I even emphasized the answer.
I actually already knew that one because I learned a little bit about it when I discovered saffron and started cooking with it a little bit.
Yeah, you know what? If you can grow that, you can make some money, but you have a lot of work to do because collecting those little anthers where the pollen is very tedious. Okay, number six. Which flower is pollinated almost exclusively by yucca moths in one of nature's most specialized relationships? Is it the agave, yucca, century plant, or ocastillo? You
that's
better not miss this one. You
that's
better
a
not miss this
question.
One, Sue.
I think this
well,
one went over
probably,
my head.
It's probably the yucca, but I want to say the first one.
Don't say the first one.
but I'm going to say the yucca.
Yes, it is the yucca plant. Okay, I mean, you know, it's yucca moth. Okay, number seven. The ancient Egyptians associated which flower with rebirth and the sun? Is it the lotus, the iris, the poppy, the hyacinth?
I'm going to go with lotus.
Tom? Hmm. You're not competing today, so it's okay to go with the answer that Sue gave us if you want to do that.
Locust sounds universal to me, so let's try.
Yeah, locust is right.
Thank you.
Okay, number eight. Which country is the world's largest producer of roses by stem count? Is it Colombia, or is it Kenya, Ecuador, or India?
Turkey's not in there?
No, Turkey's only at Thanksgiving.
No, I was thinking of the country.
I'm sorry, Sue.
Oh.
Colombia, Kenya, okay. Ecuador, India.
I think it's
I'm going to go with Colombia.
I think it's a South American country because it seems like when I was in a florist shop, they were flying these in. So,
which one are you going to go with?
I guess.
It's not Kenya and India.
That's right. Let's go with Colombia also.
And that is correct. Okay, the next one, the corpse flower, which a few years ago one bloomed at Michigan State University, is famous for its odor. Can take how many years for its first bloom? 2 to 4, 5 to 7, 7 to 10, or 12 to 15?
I'm going to go with 7 to 10.
Tom?
I'm going to hedge my bet with 7 to 10 also.
That is absolutely correct. You guys are doing really well today. Number 10.
Much better than last month.
Well, it happens. Number 10. Which commercially important flower is unique in that its blooms are actually specialized colored leaves called spathes? Is it the Antirrhinum, Gerbera daisy, Lithianthus, or Ranunculus? Well, those are a mouthful, huh?
You're adding to my vocabulary here.
What was the first one again?
Anthurium. Sorry, I mispronounced that one.
I think I'm going to go with the Anthurium.
Tom?
The Gerber sounds too domestic, so that doesn't sound right.
Well, the Gerber's like a daisy, so yeah. I don't think that's...
The specialized colored leaves called spathes.
I think it's the Anthurium.
I think we'll go with the exotic Anthurium.
And that would be correct. Now, this one I didn't know. This one says, what is the primary commercial use of marigolds in the poultry industry? Is it feed preservation, disease prevention, egg yolk pigmentation, or growth stimulation?
Egg yolk pigmentation.
It would seem like they are quite colored often and in the yellow spectrum, so let's go with that.
That's correct. That was really interesting.
That's a reasonability answer. You know, mm-hmm. You rationalize it.
All righty. I think that's it. Oh, no, it's not.
Oh, do we get to ask questions now?
No, you still have 4 more to go. Sorry.
Oh.
Which flower was used historically to treat heart conditions and led to the development of cardiac glycoside medications?
Foxglove.
Yes, and your other options were monkhood, larkspur, or hellebore. Did you know that, Tom?
I knew that there was something, and yeah. I think I've heard it, but it wasn't on the tip of my tongue.
Yeah, we wouldn't suggest you chew or smoke the seeds.
Okay.
Next.
And if you gave anybody monkshood, that would be the last heart problem they'd ever have.
Yeah, some of these perennials are kind of rough. All right. Number 13. Which flower was used in medieval Europe as a stewing herb to repel insects and freshen floors? Was it the tulip, sweet woodruff, delphinium, or snapdragon?
I think it's a woodruff.
Tom?
This is a wild guess, so... Oh, boy. Let's go with the woodruff.
I would go with that one, too. I think the sweet kind of gives you an indication.
Yes,
you might want to consider that one. It is sweet woodruff. Number 14, which nation dominates global vanilla flavor production? It's a flavor derived from orchids, mm-hmm. so it's going to be in a warm place.
Mm-hmm.
Is it A, Indonesia, B, Mexico, C, Madagascar, which is off the coast of Africa, or Tahiti?
Well, I know I've seen a Mexican vanilla production, so that I'm going to go with Mexico.
What about you, Sue? I can tell you're not a cook.
I am not sure about that because Mexico does produce a lot of vanilla.
They do.
Madagascar is, you know, theirs is prize and Tahitian vanilla. Those are, it doesn't mean they make the most, but it's the most prized, like the Bourbon vanilla.
Well, we're talking about the nation that dominates global production. They dominate global production.
You're going for volume, so I'm going to guess Mexico.
You're wrong on that one. It's Madagascar.
Uh-huh.
Oh.
It's not in my backyard.
They branded theirs. They brand the beans because there's actually vanilla bean rustling, if you can believe that, but there actually is.
I can believe it.
So they brand their little pods so that they can't be stolen.
It is such a pleasant flavor, too. It's just wonderful. Mm.
So not all vanilla is created equal?
No, there are different types. And you can get vanilla that is in an alcohol suspension, but you can also buy vanilla paste, which is really good. Not cheap, though.
You can even, yeah, that's good. You can get it at Trader Joe's. I've seen it there.
Mm-hmm. The world's oldest known rose bush is still living today. Grows on a wall of a cathedral in which country? France, Germany, England, Austria. And I think
Germany.
We've had this question before. Tom,
Germany.
What's yours?
It does sound familiar. And I like Sue's answer, Germany.
And that would be correct.
All right.
Yay!
You guys did really well today.
Well, we arranged the gamut there.
Yeah, we had to make up for last month. Ugh.
Well, I did try to make this a little bit more difficult.
Unfortunately, those last month's episode is archived on Strong Tower Radio. So if you really want to hear Tom and Sue struggle with that quiz, you can go listen to it on str.fm or strongtowerradio.org on the archive page under Strong Tower Radio. We're going to take a break here, and after we come back, we're going to throw some questions at Gary. Stay tuned.
This is Ruthie Calkins from Tustin. The Bible tells us that heaven will be the dwelling place of God's friends. That's why I'm so excited about supporting Strong Tower Radio. Their unique blend of thought-provoking speakers, stirring inspirational messages, and heartwarming music reaches into the lives and hearts of each listener, helping them to develop and cherish a friendship with God. If this radio station has been a blessing to you and your family, why not join me and hundreds of others in supporting Strong Tower Radio with a financial gift? They're 100% listener supported and could really use your help right now. You can send your check to Strong Tower Radio, Post Office Box 567, Cadillac, Michigan 49601. Or you can visit their secure website to use your credit card at strongtowerradio.org. Strong Tower Radio, where God's character is proclaimed.
We're back with Good Growing with the Garden Guy, Gary Heilig and Sue and Tom Majeure. In the first section, we had a quiz on flowers. And then the second session, we're going to have a quiz for Gary. Gary, I am wondering, is greenhouse rotation? You have a limited amount of space. What can you rotate? What should you rotate? You know, we talk about field crops rotating, but in a fixed garden space, in a greenhouse, what's the deal about rotation?
Well, first, let's talk about why we rotate.
Okay.
On a larger scale, you can rotate because the insects that feed on your crop will tend to want to overwinter fairly near it. So if you have a large area, if you move a crop to another location, then it's not as easy for that pest to get there. Depends on how mobile they are. Obviously, if you can fly versus crawl, you can traverse a larger area. Another reason we do that is disease buildup, especially root diseases can build up in the soil like verticillium or whatever. And moving things out of an area for a while can help that. For instance, with cabbage, there's a disease called club root where the roots get really swollen. And when you get that in the soil, you have to rotate out of anything in the mustard family for 7 years for that disease to go away. Another reason that we will rotate is because of the nutrients that are removed from the soil. For instance, you have heavy feeders, like say corn, for instance, and then you have light feeders like lettuce. And you don't want to grow heavy feeders in the same place year after year after year because it'll just decimate the soil in terms of nutrients. Now we can replace things. And if you're doing that and you're monitoring all the different nutrients, then you can get away with doing planting in the same place for the nutrient standpoint. Now, in a greenhouse where it's a much smaller space, insects are going to have no trouble traveling from one end of that greenhouse to the other. Diseases can move through the soil also, depending on what plants that are infected nearby. So moving things for diseases is not that effective either. The one thing it does make a difference is when plants are feeding. And like I said, lettuce is a light feeder, but it also can only take nutrients from like the top couple of inches of the soil because the roots aren't very deep. Whereas a tomato is a much deeper plant. It'll go down 3 or 4 or more feet and spread out quite a bit. And so it will pull more nutrients out of the soil. And they've done research, and we can tell just what a plant is pulling out of the soil. So that's a reason why you want to move things around. But, of course, you also want to replace nutrients too. So there's not that much of a advantage, but there's a little bit of one.
As far as pests, personally, I experienced the hornworm. Would rotation take care of hornworm?
No. Because the hornworm moth has such a large range that rotating is going to make absolutely no business. And we're going to talk about that a little bit later when we talk about how do insects find the crops they're after.
All right. One other question is about garlic growing. I've been blessed this year. I've got garlic coming up that is anywhere from 2 inches of foliage above the surface to about 4 inches or higher than that. What's good advice for garlic growing?
A couple of things that I would do with the garlic. In the spring, when it's up, it's going to need some fertilizer, and you'd use about a tablespoon of a balanced fertilizer, like a 10-10-10 or a 12-12-12. If it's an organic fertilizer and it's, say, 5-5-5, use 2 tablespoons per foot of row. And that can be put down right now. Another thing that you really want to do is control weeds. So you can put a mulch down when the plants are up high enough to where the mulch won't smother them. And my garlic right now is up, I think, about 6 inches or more now. And I've already put the first fertilizing on. So the next thing I'll go through is do some weeding and mulch it.
What about
when's the best time to harvest the scapes on the garlic?
When they get a size that you consider acceptable to harvest them. I mean, they can be harvested while they're smaller. They can be harvested while they're larger. So it doesn't really make that much of a difference. When they're there and you want to use them, go right ahead.
All right. What about using chicken? You can get pellets of chicken manure and stuff. Is that an acceptable fertilizer?
The thing about chicken manure is it tends to be higher in soluble salts when it is new.
Okay, this is dried.
If it's been around for a while, then you'll be all right. But be careful because we consider that a hot fertilizer. And it's especially if it hasn't had a chance to sit around for a while. But if it's been, say, mixed with something like bedding or something like that, and it's been sitting around for a while, then you're fine.
Okay, great. Okay, let's talk about May planting vegetables, fruits, and flower gardens.
Well, we're just a little bit away from May, and so cool season crops can go in. Some people have already planted peas. Any of the leafy greens like lettuce can be put in right now. peas, I already talked about peas, but they should be in, if you've already had a sowing and you want to extend when your harvest is going to be, you might want to put in a second sowing. Onions can be put in, carrots can be put in. They will germinate when the soil is warm enough, but they're pretty tough seeds, so they're okay. You can also start onions in a pot and then let them get up to the size of transplants and transplant them that way. But they can be direct seeded into the yard too. But it's really important to keep the weeds under control with onions. Otherwise, they're not going to do very well.
As far as peas, is there too early to sow peas?
Well, you have to be able to get out and work the soil. A lot of these things, like, for instance, lettuce can be sown in the fall and it'll overwinter and come up. You probably could do the same thing with peas as long as your soil isn't totally saturated. Like, I have a sandier soil on the northern side of my property. If I wanted to sow pea seeds in the fall, I could do that because they wouldn't get too wet. The only problem I'd have to worry about is something coming along and eating it.
Yes. Okay.
But normally people...
What about...
Go ahead.
What about, like, when you're growing and germinating, you know, doing your own starter things, and you have something that needs that little heat mat to kind of help out, like watermelon or pumpkins or something?
Are you saying peat pots?
No, like a heat mat
Heat, I thought you said peat, yeah. Yeah, certainly.
When have they had enough and they can stand on their own feet and be cold?
The whole point of a heating mat is to get them to germinate. Once those seeds are germinated and you can see them starting to emerge, then you can take them off of the heating mat. Mm. And since a heating mat will only cover one flat at a time, what I normally do is get them started. As soon as I see things germinating, I get it off the heat mat and put the next things on there because it does accelerate germination. And especially if you get one of those attachments that allow you to dial the temperature that's ideal for the seeds that you're trying to grow. Now, a lot of times what I will do is I'll have mixed things in a flat. For instance, I'll start tomatoes and I'll start broccoli and various other things that I plan on transplanting. But if you were doing, say, a flat of zinnias, there's a certain temperature that they prefer. You set it on that and they'll just about jump out of the soil. Keep
so
the soil moist,
of course.
Them,
when you got them up and they're starting, you're thinking, I'm going to put them out. It's warm enough now. I'm going to put them out. And you hear the word, they need to be hardened off. How do you do that and how long?
Hardening off is a process because when a plant grows indoors, it does not develop the waxy cuticle that it needs to be resistant to both desiccation and protection from the salt, the ultraviolet rays of the sun. So if you take a plant that's been growing indoors and put it outside, it's going to burn it really quickly. And then may burn it bad enough to kill it, depending on how hot it is. So what I have found out that you can do is simply put it in a shady area and leave it there. And so if it gets maybe an hour worth of sun, that's not enough to damage it. But when something's in a shady area, just leave it out there for a week and it'll be ready to put into the garden. You read books where it says expose the plants a couple of hours one day and then do it over 7 to 10 days, expose more and more. I find that if you just put it in the shade where it doesn't get more than an hour direct sunlight, then you're set. You don't have to fuss with it. Of course, you have to be aware of what the temperatures are going to be at night.
Mm-hmm.
Because otherwise you could get caught.
Yeah. I have what I call a germinator. It's a stack. It's 4x4, mm-hmm. and it's 8 feet high. And I put cloth over the top so it doesn't get sunlight direct straight down. Plus, you've got different layers. So if you've got a flat above it, it's going to block the direct light. So really the top, I put an old Afghan up there. Probably a little bit of light gets through. It's getting light from the side. You know, it's getting it from mm-hmm. the east and the west and the south as the sun passes over, but not direct. It seems to work.
My daughter gave me a couple of these little plastic covered greenhouses that will hold a few flats, probably holds about 8 flats. If I had the flats in there and they were in direct sunlight, they'd be okay. The only thing you'd have to be concerned about is them drying out too fast. But they're not getting direct sunlight. That light is being filtered through the plastic.
Is one layer of plastic sufficient? I mean, the hoop house has plastic, and then there's the plastic of the germinator. So it's going through two levels.
Yeah, you don't have to worry about that. Okay. The seedlings will be protected.
Very good. Okay, anything else that we need to talk about?
We have a specific question to ask Gary.
Go ahead.
So they do a lot of their plants, you know, start them inside ahead of time because they have a shorter growing season and so on. Well, in the past, it didn't work out. They've tried direct sowing for parsnips. And what is the best way? So, you know, okay, it's time to do it, and the best method.
What are we trying to grow?
Parsnips.
Okay. Now, parsnips, you know, is a root crop. You can't start that ahead of time. About the only way you could do that, and I wouldn't even try it, because with carrots and parsnips and things like that, since it is a tap root, it will send that tap root down first, and it's going to be very thin. So when you try to transplant it, you're going to break that root. So I wouldn't even try to start anything early. What you could do is, if you're having germination issues, is pre-germinate the seed and then plant it. But you have to be very careful when you handle it. Now, with parsnips, they can be planted in early May, because by then the soil is starting to warm up, depending on what kind of soil you have. If it's a lighter textured soil like sand, it's going to be fine. But heavier clays, you may have to wait a little bit longer because it may still be waterlogged, depending on how much rain you've had in your area. But again, with planting them, you don't want to plant a seed any deeper than twice its diameter. And a lot of times people will plant seeds way too deeply and they have poor emergence because they basically have to use a lot of energy just to break the surface. So those are the things that I would consider. Make sure that the area where you plant the seed is well watered but not soaking wet. So take into consideration how much rain you're getting. Other than that, parsnips aren't that difficult to grow. Make sure that you have a seed that's newer seed. Every seed has a certain amount of time that it will germinate in a high percentage. And say parsnips and carrots will usually be around 3 years or so. And if you don't know for sure, you can go online and ask ChatGPT to print you out a chart that tells you different types of vegetables or flowers and what's the ideal time to store those plants. And if they're a little older than ideal, but they've never been opened, you're in better shape than some that are a little older that have been opened. And if they haven't been stored in ideal conditions, they won't germinate as well.
When you say open, many of these come into paper little envelopes.
Mm-hmm.
You're saying just open it?
Well, some of these things come sealed in like foil packets.
Okay.
And when those are opened, the countdown starts on longevity. But if you have a packet of seeds that's never been opened, whether it's in paper or aluminum or whatever the case may be, you have a little bit more time because they're still being stored like they should be. And cool and dry is the ideal storage for anything. This year, I started a bunch of seeds that are older, and I'm going to try to make a video later on YouTube on how well they came up. And I'll tell you what it was, how old it was, and show you what the germination percentage was.
Also, what about, this is probably more of a fall question, but preserving seeds, we put them in the refrigerator and they molded. What about putting them in? Some people said they put them in the freezer.
Well, the reason they probably molded in the refrigerator is they weren't dry enough before you put them in there.
Okay.
And in a lot of electronics and other things that you buy, they'll have these little desiccation packets in them. Save those. make sure that you air dry the seeds properly. And then when you package them up, throw one of those little packets in there, and the refrigerator's fine. It's just that if it's too moist and it's in plastic, that's a perfect breeding chamber for fungi.
Okay. What about when you're planting your seeds, you're starting them indoors, is heat sufficient until it emerges, or do you need to have heat and light for emergence? And
well, most seeds are deep enough to where they don't get a lot of light, and they'll germinate without the light. But there are certain seeds that require light, and usually on the package what they'll tell you is just sow them on the top of the soil and press them in. Don't cover them. All the others can be covered, and they're probably getting some light depending on how deep you put them, but it's not the highest priority for a lot of seeds. The other thing, the heat, like I said, there are certain chemical processes that go on in the process of germination. We talked about that last time, and the temperature makes a difference as to how fast those reactions happen. So as we said earlier, we know there are certain temperatures in which seeds like to germinate, and if you follow that, for instance, if I put a tomato in the ground right now, it might not emerge with the soil temperatures probably for a good 3 weeks. But if I put that same tomato seed in a container and on top of a heating mat, it'll be up in 3 days. So the faster the seeds come up, the better, because the longer they're in the ground and they haven't germinated, the more likely they are to be attacked by a fungus.
What about the temperature of, do herbs, you talk about temperatures, many plants, tomatoes and stuff, up to 85 degrees Fahrenheit for germination. Herbs, what is their range, or do they have?
It's pretty much the same range, between around 65 to 80 degrees or so. But if you want to know exactly, if there's ever been any research on it, my favorite little buddy is ChatGPT, and I'll say, I want to grow some thyme. What is the ideal germination temperature? Boom, you have that information.
Go by herb. Very good. Thank you, Gary. Completes the second segment of Good Growing with the Garden Guy. We will be back for the final segment after this break.
When you're taking a trip, it's important to stay on the right road and to follow the GPS or roadmap to be sure that you get to your destination. Likewise, on your trip to heaven, it is vital to follow the roadmap, the Bible, God's positioning system. To do that, stay with Strong Tower Radio as we uplift the Bible and proclaim God's character. If you'd like to help with this mission, go to our secure website, www.strongtowerradio.org, and click on the donate button, or call 231-468-2087. We thank you, and may God bless you as we proclaim God's character together.
We're back with Good Growing with the Garden Guy, affectionately called the Garden Guy, with Gary Heilig, Sue Majeur, and Tom Majeur on Strong Tower Radio. We're going to, Gary, you hinted about growing lentils, chickpeas in Michigan. Do you have a progress report?
Well, when I was doing the research with my little buddy, Chat, I said, hey, yo, Chat, can we grow lentils and chickpeas in Michigan? And he said, oh, yeah, you can do it. And so if you wanted to grow some lentils, the first thing you have to do is find some seeds. Now, you can grow lentils from a source, like from the store, as long as they're full-size lentils. They're not cut or anything.
Not split.
But the germination is not as well. And when you buy seeds from a reputable dealer, they're certified seeds. In other words, they don't have diseases and all those sorts of things coming with your seed. And you have better germination. So I went on Amazon. I typed in lentil seeds, and most of the places require you to buy quite a few because they're something that would be grown like a field crop. But Amazon had some manageable sizes. So I've ordered some of both.
So you're going to be giving seeds to all your friends?
If somebody wants some, okay. Yeah. But anyway.
Are they hard to harvest?
I have no idea, Sue. It's a legume, so I have a feeling it's going to be like shelling peas. But I've never seen the plant. I didn't look up what the plant looked like, but I'm going to find out this year. And what I'm hoping to do is
do a video
on it for YouTube. But anyway, the time to plant the seed is as soon as you can work the soil. So we're talking about late April, early May. So we're approaching the time. If you can get in your garden and work it, which we've had quite a bit of rain, so I may have to wait a little bit. They're both full sunlight plants, and they like moderately fertile soil, pH between 6 and 7, which is what most vegetables like. So there's nothing special there. And when you plant the seed, you plant it about an inch deep, which is fairly deep for a seed, and about 2 to 3 inches apart. So they're put together pretty close. And they are, most varieties are short, but they do tend to sprawl somewhat. So you might want to give them some light support. And they mature in between 90 to 110 days. So here in Michigan, at least, what do you have up here, Tom? We have about 140 around Lansing.
I hadn't looked it
up. So you probably have around 120, maybe a little less.
We go around June 6th to October, early October.
Yeah, so even up here you would have enough time to grow lentils. And, of course, you guys go all the way down to Illinois, right?
Right.
So they probably could get them in the ground right now, depending on how warm it's been down there. And they, there are a few pest problems that you have to deal with. With some of these, you might have some aphid issues. And by the way, they're both legumes.
Okay.
So they benefit from an inoculant. There are these inoculants, we talked about them in the past, like rhizobium, where you buy them to put in the row when you plant beans or you plant peas. Well, you can do this for those also. So you put your seed in the row and then just sprinkle the inoculant over top. It's a dry material.
It's like a powder, isn't it?
Yeah, it's like it's kind of a little granular, but not real fine. And basically what these organisms do is they develop a relationship with the roots, and they produce these nodules that allow them to take nitrogen from the air and convert it to a usable form for the plants. And then, of course, when those nodules break down, anything growing around it can take up that nitrogen. So they actually add something back to your yard or your soil. Now, with the lentils, you harvest them when the lower pods start to turn tan and the plants begin drying, and you pull up the entire plant and allow it to finish drying in a protected area before you thresh them. And, of course, threshing is where you bang the plant on something to knock the lentils loose, and, of course, you'll have to clean them up because there'll be all kinds of other dry plant material in there. So it's going to be a little bit of work, but I think it'd be worth trying.
All right. Now, lentils and chickpeas, you're talking at the same time. Lentils are smaller. Mm-hmm. Chickpeas are half marble size or two-thirds marble size. Any other similarities between lentils and chickpeas?
Well, there's one thing that you have to understand is lentils are direct sown and so are chickpeas. Because the seed is so big, people might be tempted to say, let's do some transplants, but lentils don't transplant very well. They don't like very heavy clay soils either that tend to stay wet for long periods of time because there's certain soil-borne diseases that can attack the seed, so you want to be careful about that. The sowing time is the same for the chickpeas, but you want the soil to be at least 50 degrees Fahrenheit. And that's where I always mention a soil thermometer is a good thing to have, because you can put the soil thermometer down, measure the temperature at about an inch, and then use that as an indication as when the proper time is to put your beans in and various other things. And you'll get much better germination that way. With the chickpeas, they could be planted anywhere from 1 1/4 to about 2 inches deep.
That's deep.
I think I would be a little bit concerned about planting something 2 inches deep. I'm probably going to go with a little less. And then the plants need to be about 4 to 6 inches apart. And then the rows need to be at least 18 to 24 inches apart. So, and of course, I mentioned the inoculum that you needed. The other thing about watering is chickpeas are more drought tolerant. So you want to be careful about watering too much. Neither one likes overhead watering. So it's better to water down at the base of the plant. So if you like to put a overhead water in the middle of the garden, spray everything, they're not going to particularly care for that. And again, you can use store-bought chickpeas for this, but you tend to have better outcome if you buy certified seeds, and most of the seeds are certified when you buy them from a...
Is it because they're more dried or...
No, when seeds are certified, they're grown under certain conditions. There are people that come and inspect to make sure you don't have diseases that'll go into the seeds, and they make sure they're true to the variety and all kinds of different things.
And storage is probably a much more stringent issue for certified seeds than the stuff you get in the store where it was chucked in a warehouse.
Oh, definitely, yeah. So you'd always want to start with the certified seed. Now, you can have some problems with aphids feeding on the tender growth. Just like a lot of other plants, you can have cutworms. You come out in the morning and you notice plants are cut down. So you need to watch out for those. And there are some leaf beetles that can cause some problems. I would treat them as you need them. If you have a very dry, hot year, spider mites can become a problem. Most of the time, you don't need to spray them, but this is the one time I'd probably take the hose and put it on a light spray and just blow the mites off, and the plants can recover from that.
Does this mean you're going to bring us hummus after harvest?
You know what? My hummus isn't as good as the hummus I get from Aladdin's in Lansing. Their hummus is so smooth and delicious. I'm working on trying to perfect that.
I've heard the secret is that you make your hummus when the chickpeas are still warm or hot.
Yeah, and also to get it really smooth, toward the end you put ice water in as you're processing it.
And ice cubes.
Yeah, I don't know if it's ice cubes, but really, really cold water. And that also has an effect. But that's something different. The other thing...
Well, will we be happy to try any samples?
You won't even come up here.
Yes, I do. You're just not there at the same time.
I tell you what, Sue, we would be glad
to try any samples.
If you do that, I'll make some, and then I'll bring some from Aladdin so that we can compare the two.
There you go.
And I'll bring the pita bread, too, and the Lebanese salad.
Yeah. It sounds like a shawarma king down by me.
Oh,
they have the smoothest, creamiest, just the right amount of lemon and garlic in it. Perfect.
I didn't used to like hummus. And then my daughter really liked it, Leanne, our youngest daughter. And one day I tried it and I said, oh, I like this. So
the light came on.
And even when sometimes we'll buy French fries at the Lebanese restaurant, and I actually will dip my French fries in hummus. It's absolutely delicious.
That's good. That is yummy.
Yeah. Now, the other thing is the wildlife, like rabbits, will feed on it. Deer will feed on it. Sometimes field mice will get in there and feed on your plants. So specifically, the mice will feed on the freshly planted seeds, especially the chickpeas. So you have to watch out for that.
What about voles and moles?
And
chuck. Voles probably won't. Moles and voles are the same thing.
Are they?
A vole is basically a field mouse, and a mole is different. The voles you have to worry about. The moles you don't, because they primarily eat earthworms and other insects and things, but they eat very little vegetable matter, so you don't have to worry about them. The field mouse you do have to worry about. Now, there is a product called Thyram that you use. It's a fungicide, but you put it down when you plant bulbs, and it will keep things away. And Thyram would probably keep mice away from your seeds also. If you have that problem, but most likely you won't unless you're near a field where there are a lot of field mice.
Oh, well, they like to come in Tom's greenhouse.
I have something that visits me. Hey, let's talk about growing bamboo. Gary, you've hinted at this before. Can we grow bamboo in Michigan? And why would we want to do it?
Well,
and don't you have to be careful what kind you get, not to make angry neighbors?
Yeah, bamboo is one of these plants that there are clumping types and there are types that will spread. There are bamboos that will be hardy, and the reason people would want to plant bamboo is they just want something with a different texture in their yard. There are some bamboos that the canes themselves are large enough that you could cut them after they've died back during the winter and use them for stakes for things to grow up.
Mm-hmm.
There's a bunch of bamboo growing on Canal Road in Lansing that I look at all the time, and I don't know if anybody ever harvested this right next to the road. And also, there are some edible
species. So if there's a cutting there, we'll come looking for you.
Well, it's probably in the right-of-way, but somebody has planted it, so I don't mess with other people's work. If I knew who did it and they didn't care, then I'd go and harvest some and use them for my beans or whatever.
Yeah, down in Georgia, a lot near my son, they had some that was growing up, and he took some of it just to stake some of his plants.
And there's some very decorative bamboos and edible bamboos. Most of the decorative stuff, they get really large, won't grow in Michigan. They just can't take the winters, but there are some that will. And there are some species that can be eaten. So, but it's not like you just cut the bamboo and chop it up and put it in your Asian food, because there are certain chemicals in them that are not good for you. And so it has to be peeled first and then boiled before you stir fry it. Otherwise, it can cause you some digestive issues. But there are some specific species that can be eaten. They're also used for privacy fences, and they're not a problem in terms of causing any issues other than they don't stay where they're supposed to stay if you get the wrong type. But it's something, again, you can go to AI and say, what are some species that grow well in Michigan? And you could also say, are there any cautions that I have to be concerned about? You could ask, what are the best species for eating? And you could ask it, how do I prepare it if I want to cook with it or whatever? The thing about AI is so nice. You just have to know how to ask the questions.
You don't have to go to the right website. It finds the right website.
What it does is it will go through all the different stuff that's out there on the web, and you can narrow it down. In terms of, like, one of the things I always do is I say, don't use Wikipedia as a source.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I don't like Wikipedia because anybody can add anything to it. So there are lots of other sources that you can go. And if I know specifically what I'm looking for, let's say, for instance, roses, and I'm asking specific questions, I'll say, I would like information from consulting rosarians, the American Rose Society, or other groups that I know what they're talking about. And so that narrows the search for AI. And so it just doesn't go out and pull it from anywhere.
Good. Before we leave, we've got to talk about asparagus. It's an early crop. I love fresh asparagus. Talk to us about it.
Well, asparagus should be coming up pretty soon, especially as it's warming up. I just got my bed all cleaned out, and I need to fertilize it and put some mulch down to keep the weeds from growing back in there. And specifically, what I wanted to mention is people will run across white asparagus in the stores, and it's something that people like, especially in Europe. And the white asparagus is blanched. It's green asparagus that's been blanched. And blanching is simply a fancy word for denying it light. So you can take some plastic pots. It has to be heavy enough so that the wind won't blow it off. And when the spears start to emerge, you put the pot over top of it so no light gets in. And without the light, the chlorophyll breaks down and you have a white spear. And like I said, it's prized in Europe. It has a milder taste. It's more tender. And it's kind of more gourmet. They do charge a little bit more for it in the store. And so as soon as it starts to come up is when you would start to blanch it if you want to do that.
That sounds great. Sounds great. What, just real quickly, Amish pest control. Tell us all about that.
Well, the reason I put this in here is I saw this really cool video. I thought it was cool anyway. About Osage orange being used to keep insects out. And they said it was an old thing that the Amish did.
Okay.
And it gives off a chemical called, I guess it's Elemol or something, that's supposed to drive insects away. And so I said, let me do a little research on that. And I did, and it turns out that there was more hype in that video than actual accuracy. And so they talked about how, yeah, the Elemol might deter some insects, but it won't work over the area that they're talking about. And so the whole idea of trying to grow Osage orange or try to find it, because you can't go to a lumberyard and buy it. You'd have to find some place where it was growing naturally, and it has to be harvested in the fall and has to be dried and all this sort of stuff. And then you make these posts that you put in your garden. Don't waste your time doing that.
All right. Well, you heard that here first.
But we will talk about some other things that you can do. And next time we'll talk about how insects find their crops.
Absolutely. So something to look forward to in the June Garden Guy. Well, stay tuned to Strong Tower Radio once a month. The second week of the month is Good Growing with the Garden Guy with Gary Heilig, Sue Majeur, and Tom Majeur. God bless. Until next time, this is a Strong Tower Radio Network production. Bye now.